Hello and welcome to The Currency Exchange, NatWest Markets FX podcast, where we try and break down the major themes and events moving currency markets this week and in the weeks ahead. We previously discussed, you know, the risks of kind of banking sector insolvency, but now it looks like we're actually discussing the risk of the U.S. sovereign insolvency. Here to join us this week is Brian Dangerfield, our G10 FX head of strategy based out in the US. Brian, this feels a bit deja vu. This is becoming a bit of a reoccurring theme for financial markets, not one that's entirely unexpected. First, tell us, what is the US debt ceiling?
So thank you very much for having me, Emer. So the debt ceiling, for those who are unfamiliar, Congress sets a limit on the amount of debt that the U.S. government can borrow. And that limit that they set is set independently of the amount of spending and revenues that Congress also sets. So Congress sets a budget, which requires the government to take in revenue via taxes and spend that revenue on either required or discretionary spending. So you think about all the things the government does with the Social Security payments, military, infrastructure funding, whatever the government says, COVID-19 stimulus. The government passes laws, and when there is an imbalance, of course, between revenues and spending, when spending is high and revenues via taxes are relatively low, then the result is that the government has to borrow to make up the difference. And of course, this is certainly not the case in the U.S. alone, but borrowing has grown very significantly, certainly through the COVID-19 stimulus period. Debt and deficit levels have grown as a result of that, total debt for sure. And so because Congress sets the debt ceiling independently of the spending, when they authorize additional spending but not the revenues to cover it, then Treasury needs to borrow in order to offset that. And then they also don't raise the debt ceiling, then they run into a point where they run out of authority to borrow. And so that is where you are now, where the U.S. is under the debt ceiling and is running up to a point where they can no longer borrow to pay out their obligations. One of the big things that the U.S. spends its money on is paying interest on existing securities. And so the risk here is that if you run out of room to borrow funds, then you could effectively have a technical default on U.S. securities. And so we're technically at the debt ceiling right now. Treasury's taking what we call emergency measures to stay under that level. There are some effectively accounting tricks that Treasury can do that they're authorized to do. For example, they can delay reinvestment of securities in what we call the Exchange Stabilization Fund. It's just one example of something that Treasury can do to sort of stave off this point where they no longer have funds on hand in order to pay the obligations and to keep effectively funding the government. So why do we care about the debt ceiling beyond sort of the obvious? And the reason is because treasuries are the risk-free asset against which the entire financial market relies. You think about how we value assets and what we think about when we think about risk premium for really all assets. The question that investors everywhere facing is, what return do I demand for holding this asset relative to a risk-free alternative? Think about in your world, Eber, you know, think about holding a South African bond versus a U.S. Treasury, where the liquidity situation is different, the size of the market, the depth of the market is much different, political risks are seemingly much different as well. That premium, the risk premium to hold South African bonds, for example, over U.S. Treasuries, is something that relies on this assumption that the U.S. Treasury is a safe haven asset, one where default risk is effectively zero. So if you upset that balance by changing that calculus, that could have impacts across global financial markets and change the way that investors are forced to think about what constitutes risk-free assets and what's the premium that you need to hold what's the risk premium existing for other assets. And so from that perspective, the possibility of default and reaching the debt ceiling has potentially significant consequences that reach far beyond the U.S.
Yeah, it really undermines that, I guess, financial market perception that the U.S. is a risk-free asset. So kind of big concerns going into this, but I guess, you know, even taking into account all this kind of creative accounting, when will the U.S. actually run out of cash?
So there's two periods to really watch here. We're recording this on Thursday morning. We're thinking about the first couple of weeks of June. And if you can get through June 15th, you're probably thinking about an extension of the potential X date, the default date, more or less, as likely falling in the beginning of August. So what creates this difference where you have 2 weeks where it's at risk and then that you sort of have a delay? And that's because of the timing of inflows and outflows, inflows specifically from tax receipts. So you think about Treasury having a cash balance, cash on hand, and outflows include any payments they need to make, whether that's interest payments on securities or payments to active military or to pension payments or what have you. Any of the actual payments that require running the government are outflows, and inflows come largely in the form of tax receipts. So Treasury has the emergency measures, which it's been using to create space under the debt limit, and they have cash on hand. There's significant uncertainty in the timing of how quickly and how large payments have to move out on a day-to-day basis. But we think it's likely that the cash balance starts to get to a point where it's uncomfortably low in the first few weeks of June. The first day of the month is usually a pretty lumpy payment day. So the first 2 weeks of June is the first serious risk point. And that's something that I think is well understood in the market. Treasury Secretary Yellen has pressed that in her letters to Congress, urging them to raise the debt ceiling well before that date. Once you get to June 15th, that's a pretty important date because it is corporate tax date. A corporate tax payment should come in, and that's something that gives Treasury additional cash on hand. And that's something that extends out that potential period for when a default could happen. And that extra headroom, in addition to some additional emergency measures that would likely be unlocked, that are expected to be unlocked at the end of June, that combination gives Treasury a bit more breathing room until we think the end of July and then into early August. And so I think you're looking at two potential flashpoints here, that if there is no deal to either suspend or raise the debt limit in the first 2 weeks of June, the cash on hand and the emergency measures available, that gets uncomfortably low. We don't necessarily think that the U.S. defaults during that period, that they can maybe make it through the June 15th date still. But that's a point where we think you're really getting to a point where you're actually counting pennies here. And that's not a point when I think where I think anyone wants to be. Even if you think that we do get through that June 15th date and the Treasury gets a bit of a refill from corporate taxes. If you do get through that date, that gives you a bit of extra time. And we think that pushes you out into early August as the point when Treasury would no longer have sufficient funds to meet its obligation. So those are the timeframes that we're really watching. If you don't have a deal, it's that first 2 weeks of June where things get very uncomfortable. If you get through those first 2 weeks of June without a deal, but without a default, then you're probably talking about early August.
I mean, it's scary to think that markets could be dealing with this, you know, potentially massive risk for financial markets out until August. But I guess the thing is that we're almost getting used to this debt ceiling issue, right? It just seems to come up increasingly every year, and yet it's always resolved. So, you know, do we think that markets maybe are a bit complacent to this risk given the significant ramifications?
I think complacent maybe isn't quite the right word, because I think it's right to assume that something gets done. That the reason, you know, we have this debate, not because anyone wants to default, but because both sides use the debt ceiling as leverage in negotiations when they are in the minority. Now, this combination of Republicans controlling the House with a Democratic president tends to be the most difficult time to get the debt ceiling over the line, especially because Republicans have a fairly small majority that leaves some of the sort of more extreme wing of their party who are generally against raising the debt ceiling and want to really push Biden to the limit on this. That gives them relatively a little bit more power than they normally have. So from that perspective, everyone in leadership, everyone in government says, you can't actually default. We're not actually going to default. Something gets done. The issue here is maybe that if that's the destination, and everyone assumes that's a destination, I certainly believe that's a destination. I think the market is well priced for that being the destination. Everyone in Congress says that's the destination. The president says that's the destination. The problem is the journey to get there. And the journey to get there could either be fairly rocky or incredibly smooth, relatively speaking. I wouldn't say it's been smooth, but this could be relatively smooth if you get a deal sometime in the next week or so. in order to get us over the line before you get to June 1st. This could be a lot rockier if you end up in June and we really are at a point where the market is watching Treasury's daily cash balance come out every day. They're watching the amount of headroom created by emergency measures, which come out on a weekly basis. That's updated on Fridays. If we get to that point, I think you reach what we consider the proverbial 11th hour. And I think the market is right to say, outside of the specific assets that are clearly impacted by this, you talk about the very, very near-term treasury bills, where you've seen some obvious dislocations because of this risk. I think it's right to say that the market's assumption is something gets done and that's the destination. But I think the concern here is that the journey from here to that something being done has the potential to either be quite rocky and quite disruptive, or it could come through relatively easily. So from a political perspective, I do think that a deal is the most likely outcome. It's really, frankly, the only outcome. We know there are other other possibilities that get talked about in the media, basically a discharge resolution ignoring the Republican Party in the House of Representatives, 14th Amendment, platinum coin. These things get thrown around. But I think it's very clear that all sides are pushing towards an agreement. And that feels like the most likely outcome to me.
I guess, as you say, though, it's all about the journey, not the end destination. So what does that mean for the dollar? Are we in for a roller coaster ride?
So for the dollar, I don't think that the dollar is really going to have a significant price response until we get into what I'd consider the proverbial 11th hour without a deal. And I think that risk zone really picks up at the beginning of June. Now, the dollar has rallied a little bit. It's sort of rallied off its lows in a number of cases, euro dollar off its highs, a dollar CNY, dollar China above 7.0, for example. And part of that rally is maybe related to the debt ceiling. If you think the positive mood music we've gotten recently on the debt ceiling is related to the possible resolution of a deal, and then that maybe you think about, okay, if a deal gets done soon, then maybe the Fed can continue a hiking cycle at the June meeting. Certainly, it feels like the intersection between the debt ceiling and the dollar inevitably involves the Fed and Fed expectations. That if we're in the first week of June and we're going through this period where we're counting pennies and we're watching the Treasury cash balance and markets are pricing the clear risk of significant disruption, that's something that's going to lean into weaker growth expectations, more likelihood of a Fed pause, and just general concern over the U.S. economy rising. And that's probably where you see the dollar impact most clearly, assuming we do get a deal at the end, that you end up with something getting done. So I don't think the dollar trades with a significant risk premium or discount related to the debt ceiling in the next couple of weeks. If you get a deal before then, that'd be great. And it effectively pushes out this debate until, you know, the next time we have to go through the process of raising the debt ceiling. But from the dollar perspective, look, we're thinking that the near-term impact is going to be isolated to if you really get to that nerve-wracking point. And the dollar impact here, if you look back at previous debt ceiling incidents from 2011 and 2013, there really isn't a clear pattern. In those two instances, the dollar has rallied and sold off into the decision and into a debt ceiling resolution. And then immediately after the resolution, it's both rallied and sold off. And what you see when you go back in time and look through some of the drivers at the time is that the debt's impact on the dollar, the broad dollar, has largely been a function of how the debt ceiling and the debate around spending feeds into the other macro drivers at play at the time. And the Fed is a really obvious one, where the debt ceiling debate in 2011 and the debt downgrade by S&P that happened after the debt ceiling was ultimately resolved, that played a role in a pretty dovish Fed pivot at the meeting in August 2011, just a couple of days later. It wasn't the only driver, but it did play a role in that downgrade in the dovish direction by the Fed. And that was one of the reasons why the dollar weakened in the aftermath of the 2011 experience. In 2013, you had a similar experience where the market saw the resolution and the lower spending that came in the resolution of that debt ceiling debate as something that may allow the Fed to delay a planned taper announcement of a previous QE program. So the main story here, I think, is if you assume you get a resolution in debt ceiling, which I do, and that you avoid these worst case scenario style outcomes, then the way the debt ceiling impacts the dollar is via the usual channels, growth expectations, and how it impacts the Fed in the near and medium term.
Playing devil's advocate, what if you do get a worst case scenario? What happens to the US dollar if the US does default on its debt?
So the US is the global safe haven currency, is the global reserve currency. And as I mentioned, the way that risk-free assets, the way that risk premium prices off of risk-free assets is potentially something that could be a flashpoint if you do get to this moment where the US faces a technical default. So from that perspective, I think the initial reaction would be a dollar rally, simply because old habits die hard. The dollar is the currency of need. It is the trade invoicing currency. It's still the global reserve currency. That's maybe more under question now than it has been at any point in the last couple of decades, but it still is the lion's share of foreign exchange reserves and the lion's share of global trade denominated in dollars. So from that perspective, I think you're talking about weaker currencies that have strong ties to the global business cycle. You're talking about risk-sensitive currency, certainly in your world, EMIR and emerging markets. There are certainly risks there. If the market assumes that the debt ceiling going over the debt limit is something that is negative for growth globally, that obviously has significant implications for the economies whose fortunes are tied to the demand outlook and the global growth outlook. So from that perspective, perversely, the dollar could rally against a number of currencies if you do get to this point where the U.S. is the one facing a technical default. One potential winner here could be the euro, and we'll talk about this, I think, a bit more in a second. But the reserve currency status of the dollar, if a default leads to some change in the market's perception of reserve currency, maybe the euro could be a beneficiary there. And then I think the low-yielding safe havens, which we tend to focus on during times of stress, yen and Swiss franc, for example, those could also be beneficiaries if you get to this point where the U.S. is actually facing or does have a technical default.
It's definitely hard being an emerging market currency where you feel the pain even when the cools is on the other side of the world. And I'm sure you would get kind of capital and funding really getting sucked out of emerging markets in that instance. I have to ask you about the broader ramifications of this. I mean, kind of we're living with this overhanging threat of a U.S. default. These are obviously, you know, the biggest kind of reserve asset, U.S. treasuries globally. I mean, does this overhanging threat, does it threaten the U.S.'s status as a reserve currency? Will it kind of provide more momentum behind de-dollarization globally?
So I think it does, though there's limits to how quickly you can see a world where the dollar is no longer the reserve currency and the trade denomination currency of choice. I think this adds to a longer term trend of moving towards sort of a multipolar world. If you look at currency reserves, you do see this trend of lower dollar on net, 60% of reserves now. That's its lowest point in several decades, 60% of global foreign exchange reserves. And euro is 20% and the rest of the currency universe makes up the remainder. And so from that perspective, if you think about which currencies could benefit in a world where the dollar's reserve currency status is under threat, euro is probably the number one beneficiary there simply because it is the second largest and it's the currency that probably is best positioned to take up some of that. But what I don't think you're pointing towards, what we're heading towards, is if a debt default happens, then we are suddenly changing the way that business is done globally, that the dollar is fully losing its status as the global reserve currency. I think instead, what it's likely is just to continue the trend towards dollar having a less hegemony type status, that it's the only currency at play. We know the euro is taking on greater importance. CNY is taking on greater importance, albeit at a slower rate. And so I think these trends are ongoing. This probably these debt concerns are one of the reasons behind this. I think it would, if we were to get to a point where we default, it probably continues in that trend. But I don't think this is the moment where if we go over the line on a technical default, let's say there's a technical default on short-term securities for a couple of days, an accidental default, let's say, and then you have an extension of some kind. That's not something that necessarily requires a big shakeup in the global order in terms of trade denomination and currency status. But I think it's something that does push in that direction, in the direction that we've already been traveling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really hard to replace just how ubiquitous US treasuries are and how widely they are used. We certainly saw it in the aftermath of the pandemic, and they were used for short-term kind of liquidity in the system. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me. I probably interrogated you enough on this subject. Guys, thank you for joining us for this week's episode. If you did like it, please let us know by clicking like. And remember to subscribe so you can get the first episode. If you can get the latest episode first. Thanks again.